Après moi, le déluge. By Here Nor There, Near Nor Far, and read by Chestnut Pod. Recorded for Tolkien Ek Phrases Week 2023. For the day one prompt, textiles and fashion. For her children, she weaves. It is not her greatest skill, not this kind of weaving, standing up at a loom as tall as she is, with a wingspan to match a gull's. Linen thread is too fine and slippery. She does far better with reed plaits or hemp canvas. Fishing nets require diligence, but they hold no grudge if the knot is tied twice or 1,000 times. Table fabric, clothing fabric, must be smooth, dense, light. Every snapped thread must be replaced, and every gap in the pattern accounted for. She will not give her children much, but she will give them this. She lays the warp threads out, 10 for every length of her thumb. All told, there are over 100 of them, divided into pairs and tied to loom weights. Still, the elven ladies will sigh and tell her of how high thread counts could climb in Menegroth, where Melian showed her weavers to make mist-thin cotton, silver as the stars. It would seem like a fairy tale, if not for the little nightdress she was carried away in, which sits in a special drawer separate from her mundane clothes. A muslin shift, deceptively simple, until you look at it sideways and see the waterfalls and willow leaves embroidered into the very weave. From one angle, nightingales dance around the collar, and from another, there are leaping hounds. Whenever she holds it, a rare occurrence, for it makes her teary, it feels like air in her hands. There is only one of it, and she is having twins. Besides, some heirlooms should stay buried. They will have new clothes, her children, fresh linens for a fresh world. The first 2 years, they won't need much. Lady Arian, friend to men, swoops lower and lower each year, trying to spook the enemy away. To cope with the sweltering heat, most of the Beorian children go naked except a waistcloth and some simple charms. Ilwing won't deprive them of playmates. Both she and Eärendil are aware of how difficult it is to make friends with the title in the way. Duty will have its say eventually, though, and they'll need formal clothes. She rests her hand on her belly and thinks. Swaddling clothes for the younger years. A shirt for the ages of 2 to 5. A vest and trousers will be suitable after that, but she'll wait until they're of a consultable age to start work on those. This early in the pregnancy, there have been no kicks or flutters. The constant nausea, making her feel like a disgruntled owl, is so far the only physical manifestation of her condition. Yet she can feel them. They flicker on the very edge of her consciousness, two potentials not yet filled. It is like the awareness of two great cups on her periphery. Every time she looks back, there is another drop of water inside, yet still so much more to go. They will be expansive. What do you think? She asks them. Shall I stop dawdling? They give no answer. The weft thread is even finer than the warp, like gossamer. A single strand of it disappears in her fingers, cobweb, until light hits it. The whole skein must be 100 yards of hair-thin silver. It's not her spinning. She hasn't announced her pregnancy officially yet, as men are prone to early losses. Silence sometimes speaks louder than words, and tributes have been piling up at her door. Hand-me-down teething rings of thick elk bone, waistbands of carved wooden leaves, shell bracelets, tiny stud earrings, restorative tonics, and thread. So much thread. The Eldar, who spin the finest, expect her to be a weaver. It is a princess's right. Weave the cloth, bake the bread. She'll have to teach her children, regardless of gender, so that they can teach their daughters. She and Eärendil have always assumed they are mortal. Better to be presently surprised than disappointed. Open work, every 2 hands of the baby wraps, she decides, to keep it light. A simple geometric gauze of knotted weft. It's a gondolindrim technique, used especially with contrasting threads to create a dizzying multicolored sheen, but it can be adapted to the white work of Sirion. Idril wouldn't mind. Besides, she has the thread for it, right twisted crepe from one of the gnomish townspeople. She counts her threads, does the calculations, and begins to weave. The first few inches are a simple linen weave, in and out, then swap for the next row. The greatest challenge is keeping the warp straight. No wonder Gwynd has 1,000 eyes. She must watch so many little threads. It would go faster if she had someone to beat the weft for her, instead of having to pause every few rows to tighten the work. On the whole, however, she enjoys the solitude. Outside her window, 2 stories below, she can hear the town bustling, the hills calling. Further still sounds the sea. Soon, the light will be gone, and she'll put away her shuttle. First, she'd like to finish a band of open work. She picks her place carefully, hits the weft above it a few times for good measure, and begins. It's to be diamonds. Not quite the shape of the jewel that has brought them safety, but not far off, either. Where each point begins, she twists the warp threads together, 2 twining on 2, and secures each foursome with a knot in the weft. It's like making a fishing net, the repetitive twists, loops, and ties. When you weave, you have to know your position in the design. Ilwing has never struggled with belonging. Sometimes she thinks she could suffocate in it, like a flailing man in a tidal flat quicksand, but that sort of melancholy is short-lived. She'd rather her children grow up here, where they are loved by people who have loved their like before, than in the West, or Balar, or any other haven on the face of the earth. "I cannot promise you your house will be safe," she tells them, setting down her shuttle and examining her work. 7 diamonds in a staggered semicircle. They'll become stars when she goes over it with embroidery thread, a facsimile of the holy Velaikritha. It's a good place, though. A kind place. There are too few of those left. Still so much left to do. Babies are a trial to raise right. Ewing finishes her weaving 1 month after her feet start to ache. The last few yards require an extra set of hands, and she's far too tired to do anything fancy. That must be saved for post-production. Once she's off her feet, the next stages can begin. Her panel of experienced human midwives have advised her to limit her activity, as twins are a challenge for human women and practically unheard of for elves. Her mother had had older twin sisters, but most of her maternal family is dead. They're worried that the neck of her womb is too short, worried her pulse beats too hard, worried she hasn't gained enough weight. Her children burn bright in the back of her mind, stars slowly turning into suns, but Ailwing worries too. Elven children are precious gems, shepherded and protected and rarely lost. Out of the 5 half-elven children Ailwing knows, 2 have met horrible fates before the age of 8, and 2 have been only children. She wishes she had asked Idril more about her history of miscarriage. She wishes her mother were here. While Ilwing takes meetings in the cobblestone courtyard that doubles as a laundry, she makes her children clothes. The baby wraps are tied off with tassels and embroidered over, the gauzy spaces reinforced against curious little fingers. She knits warmer blankets of their rare wool, gathered from the semi-wild sheep who consent to be sheared once a year. These she makes durable, dyed the light blue the wood elves call Elu. With 4 yards of her best linen, she stitches together their shirts, carefully aligning the lay of the cloth so the drawn thread embroidery will be even. The sleeves and collars are wide, with adjustable buttons, so they can grow into them as they age. She stitches the outline of birds, sailing ships, just 2 triangles perpendicular, sprays of water cresting up, rosettes. With the tiny silver scissors that were part of her dowry, a scrap of a city long toppled, She cuts away the weft inside. "You do not have to do it alone," she is cautioned by many fronts. "I know, but I want to. I want them to be wrapped up in my love." Her mother was a great weaver, despite her youth. Sometimes, when Eowyn looks at her little nightdress, all that remains of a childhood she barely remembers, she wonders if Nimloth made it, pouring herself into every shimmering thread. Elrond has little of his childhood, and less that has survived the years. His first sword was lost in a petty battle, his brother left of his own will. But there's a scarf, one he keeps folded in a cedar chest. It was Elros's originally, he remembers that much. Elros screamed until they let him bring it. Maglor stripped their little linen shirts away a few months later, saying, "They're too small for big boys, and it's too cold here in the Badlands." What he did with them, Elrond does not know. But Elros kept the scarf, and since they slept together, it served as comfort for the both of them. On such small children, it could be a shawl, even a blanket. The linen did not hold warmth well, especially not woven so full of holes. And it always smelled faintly of smoke, a scent that could bring them to tears on a bad day. It should not have been so reassuring to come home and dig their fists into the burnished weave. "It holds the talisman of the Star Setter," he'd tell his brother, "so it can chase monsters away." He said it so authoritatively, like it was a fact he'd always known. When Elros went to Numenor, he left it in Elrond's care. "You're to be the one who remembers," he said. "This is worth recording." "There are many ways of putting down a history," Elrond protested. "Keep it for your children." "They might learn the story," Elros insisted, "but they will never know the loneliness, not while I still breathe. They will not understand, and I will not have it any other way." When Elrond attended on the king's deathbed, he brought the scarf, yellowed with age. Now it sits in a box. He shows it to his children because he wants them to understand fear, even if he hates the idea of them experiencing it. They nod solemnly, but they don't really know, and for that he is glad. One day, acting on an urge he cannot name, he shows it to Glorfindel. It's become a habit to introduce him to all antiquities, on the off chance that he recognizes them, but Elrond doubts he'd know the provenance of a linen wrap. "Ah, that's Gondolin weaving," he says brightly. "I'm no expert in textiles, but the overwork seems Yathrim. And the linen is very grey. We preferred an eggshell, if we couldn't get marble white. Someone must have made this after I died." "Yes, it's from Sirion." At times, neutrality is the best one can strive for. Glorfindel inspects it with renewed fervor, never touching the surface of the fabric, which still, after all these centuries, holds a slight sheen. "It isn't Princess Idril's work," he declares finally. When he's gone, Elrond does something he hasn't since childhood, and buries his face in it. Strange. Maybe it's the long years, or all the places it's traveled. Maybe it's how he's grown. The smell of smoke has obviously faded from the linen in the past several millennia, but lingering behind it is the subtle scent of the sea.